Can you hear the bells, man? Do they call your name out? Or do you go?
We're going to continue making art, because that's what artists do. You just keep making art, and we've got a band, so we're going to make it with the band, you know? I didn't expect it to be this, but I couldn't be happier with where I am and who I get to work with every day, and it's just great.
This is Something from Nothing, a podcast about the creative process and the individuals involved. I'm Justin Lewis. On today's episode, Josh Coffey, a musician who performs live, writes, records, and teaches. He tells his story as it pertains to his musical career. Josh also talks about his favorite song he has written and closes the show with some violin playing. Stay tuned. Support for Something from Nothing comes from Taylor Group PLLC at 15th and Jefferson in Paducah. For both businesses and individuals, Taylor Group works with clients to achieve financial viability in the present while being proactive for future goals. More about their services at taylorgroupplc.com. A community-minded accounting firm, they also have an appreciation for the creative process and the individuals involved. Josh is one of the most recognized and accomplished fiddle players in the Western Kentucky area, and this didn't happen by mistake. He started early. Josh told me his grandfather bought him a fiddle when he was born. Obviously, it was quite some time before he could play a full-size fiddle, but when he was 5, he started with lessons. His father and grandfather were in a bluegrass band, so it seems that Josh was destined to follow in their footsteps. But there was a little detour as a teenager.
At that time, interested in playing electric guitar, kind of fell in love with the blues and rock and roll.
Oh, and one other thing that took up much of his musical energy?
I was also in the band, the marching band in school, and concert band. I played tuba.
For him, it was an opportunity to play music, and his tuba playing paid off in college. He was granted some financial assistance when attending Murray State University. The plan was to become a band director. He told me he was inspired by his aunt and uncle. But Josh was derailed from this plan because of his part-time job. He was employed at a fast food restaurant for some additional income. And while he was there, he broke his finger. Because of this, he was unable to finish his juries, which is basically the end of semester test for instrumentalists. The finger he broke was the middle on his right hand. So, although he was unable to play tuba, he could still play fiddle. So he switched over and graduated with violin as his instrument focus.
So what would have happened with your playing career if you had not broken your finger at Hardee's?
Who's to tell? I have no idea. I would probably be a band director. After I broke my finger, something that kind of steered me in a different direction.
That something that steered him in a different direction? It was the tragic death of his cousin.
He had always told me I should be a performer rather than an educator. And I guess in homage to him, or I thought, you know, he died year 19. He was 19 when he passed away. And I thought, you know what, I should do what I feel like I'd want to do. I was going into education more as a means to support myself and eventually have a family. Mm-hmm. And I always wanted to be a performer. Mm-hmm. But that's a hard road sometimes, and I knew that, and so I decided to...
He decided to drop the education degree and added a bachelor's in fine arts in music. Josh does teach now, but in a different setting, one that allows for plenty of performing as well. We went on to talk about the phases of his performing career. First, he got connected with a man named Dan Knowles, who he eventually started a band with. This introduced Josh into the traveling musician life. He reflected back on the impact those early days had on him.
I just fell in love with playing in front of people and really fell in love again with folk music, which, you know, I'd really been into rock and roll, and I loved Jimi Hendrix and electric guitar stuff. And I felt a deeper connection with folk music, fiddle tunes, Irish music, and improvisation in those genres.
Their stage up was simple, just the two of them, but it was unique.
I played the mandocello, an instrument that he had built, which is tuned the same way as a cello, but shaped obviously like a mandolin. I played that some and just regular mandolin. And I also played a bit of fiddle, which I had, I never considered myself at that time a fiddler. I was more of a classical player, even though I'd played a lot of fiddle tunes growing up and with some other people. I never felt like I sounded like a fiddler. I sounded more like a classical violinist, I guess. And I really didn't think I was very good at all. But he encouraged me to do it and had confidence that I could with time spent performing and practicing. So he got me going on some fiddle tunes as well. So, and Dan plays many instruments, mostly the banjo, but a lot of guitar. And he was playing this banjo d'amore, which has these sympathetic strings in addition to the normal banjo strings, and a beautiful instrument. So yeah, it was just us two, couple mics, that was it.
Josh went on to play in a group with a couple other guys called the Ridge Runners for a while, and then Josh found himself in the group that would change his life. Their stage setup came to be quite a bit more complicated than just a couple of guys on stage. I'll let Josh describe the origin of this band.
During that time, I lived close to some local musicians, Clayton Campbell. His dad is Clay Campbell, owner of the Kentucky Opry. And I've known Clayton for a long time. We used to compete in fiddle competitions when we were kids, and he'd always beat me. And so I would go over there. I wouldn't play fiddle in front of him, but I would play mandolin. And I met Nathan Lynn through that connection because they were buddies. A little while later, I met Tommy Oliverio, who's also learning how to play the mandolin, and we got to picking. Through all of that, we started Bon and the Mash.
And they pieced some songs together. So after about 4 months of practice, they booked
two shows on the same day as our first outing playing music.
The first was a festival just outside Murray. It was a one-and-done festival. And Josh recalled Bon and the Mash's first time on stage.
And I remember the sound was horrible. And we tried to play as a five-piece through just a couple mics. We didn't know what we were doing as far as sound. You know, none of us had any idea of that. And so we just like, we're going to play for these people. And there were maybe 30 people in the middle of the day. And me being very fair-skinned, I didn't wear a hat or anything. And I remember getting very sunburnt. And we left that festival, went straight to the other one, and played at the Earth Daddies Festival and had a big time playing there right as the sun went down. And I remember we all camped, which in our career happened a lot when we would go play festivals. We would just, you know, say, hey, we're going to enjoy the festival and the rest of the night and just camp out and pick around the campfire after the show was over and make connections with people. And that was what it was all about, really, for me.
But there was a little more involved than picking around a campfire for Bon and the Mash.
We had never been in a bluegrass outfit, really, none of us. And so we were trying to figure out that, how to perform and get the best sound, I think was the biggest struggle for us, because we wanted to be represented as a bluegrass band and dealing with microphones and playing in small clubs and festivals. There's so many technical aspects to overcome But anyway, we are gearing up for our first album that we recorded down at Dan Knowles' home studio. And he really helped us hone in the tunes, learn how to record as a band to get the best outcome. From then on, we were really trying to play as much as we could.
Josh balanced playing in another band and teaching at an elementary school with playing gigs with Bon and the Mash. After about 2 years as a band, they started to make their sound a little more eclectic. And part of that had to do with an addition to the band.
We were playing at Jeremiah's, and this kid rolled up on roller skates and said, "Can I play some drums with you guys?" He played drums while on roller skates. And I remember he was standing up for some reason, and that was Bray McCoy. We asked him to join the band, and from that point, we had all these different genres that we could kind of touch on with our original material. And we were all fans of lots of different kinds of music lovers. So we started writing for, you know, electric instruments and drums, and our sound really changed from more traditional folk to, I guess, a jam band. Spun us off in a totally different direction. I felt like, you know, looking back, I didn't think we were destined to be a straight-ahead bluegrass band because of our interests being so wide and varied. And playing rock and roll is a lot of fun, you know. And so we had greater chance of appealing to a wider audience, I guess. Not that we were ever, you know, like a national touring act or anything, but I think when we went electric, we gained a lot of fans that wouldn't necessarily listen to us. We lost some fans too, but it kind of expanded our audience, and we were able to play different kinds of festivals.
After over a decade of success, including recording a number of albums, the band has come to a hiatus. Josh said there are a couple of reasons for Bon and the Mash no longer playing together.
Members of the band grew apart, I would say largely due to family life and other interests. You know, what direction the band should go. Should we go more country? Should we continue to be this jam band kind of thing, where we're improvising on stage and it's kind of a free-for-all? Or do we want to stick to our bluegrass roots? You know, all of those, we realized that, hey, we had made all these albums that went lots of different places. Maybe that's not working to be successful. Maybe we should focus on one avenue or the other, genre-wise. Everybody in the band was talented songwriters, every one of us. I feel like I'm the least talented songwriter that was in the band. Having a unified vision was difficult to see what that should be. And so those things, as well as living apart, made it almost impossible to practice, which, you know, is a necessity to be a performer. And so we ended up playing the same show largely for a couple years, maybe 3 years, where we would get together and say, well, what can we pull off for this festival that we're going to play tomorrow? You know, we're going to quickly practice our greatest hits, you know, and go play that, which people love, you know. But I don't think each of our creative juices or wants were being fulfilled when you do that, when you continually play the same songs over and over. And I think that, you know, those few aspects of being in a band were difficult for us to overcome. And so we just said, you know what, hey, had a great run. What was it, 12 years, which a lot of bands don't see a decade. So I'm really happy with the time spent with dear friends and, you know, Tickle Pink, that we were able to have some success and go play all these festivals. And I mean, I feel like I became an adult in Bon and the Mash. You know, it was such a huge part of my adult life. And up until just a couple years ago, that was, you know, one of the biggest aspects of my identity. That's what I identified with, you know, being in that band. I was a member of Bon and the Mash, you know, that's what I did. So I'm, you know, I have no regrets with it, and I wish all my brothers good luck in their endeavors.
One of Josh's current endeavors includes making music with a couple of members of Bon and the Mash. His dad, Eddie Coffey, and a former guest of this show, all the way back in season one, Nathan Lynn. A few years ago, they started the Wheelhouse Rousters. This band started with putting together songs by Mary Wheeler. Nathan Lynn had found some at the local public library that had not been used before. So they started trying out different types of arrangements. Josh and Nathan decided to bring on Josh's dad, Eddie, to join them in forming a three-piece acoustic trio, the Wheelhouse Rousters.
You know, our initial mission was to really just do that one album. I didn't see it going much farther than that.
After recording the album and playing a few shows, the experience did something surprising for Josh.
Made me fall in love with music again. Not that I didn't love music, but it just kind of reinvigorated my love for it, I guess.
Boatman dance, boatman sing, boatman do most anything. Dance, boatman dance, dance, boatman dance. Dance all night to the morning like I'm home with the gals in the morning. Hey, oh, boatman row, say never in Lonnie, Ohio.
Playing acoustic and sitting around in a room, not having this big to do with a performance, like just getting up there with a couple instruments and singing, you know. There was no setup, there was no, oh, we gotta do this, we gotta sell merch, we gotta do all this stuff, you know. It was just playing music for the fun of it, you know. We had no deadlines to meet, no, you know, we got to play this set list or whatever to satisfy people, you know, that we were having with Bon and the Mash at that time. You know, it was a much bigger ordeal to go play a show with Bon and the Mash where we had to run sound or, you know, whatever. You know, there's always going to be that aspect no matter what. It's, you know, you got to do the business side too, but there's so much to be said for the way that this kind of music is made, more folk music. There's less about the production. It's more about the music. That's what I love about the band. And we try to keep that in mind always. We don't want to get too big for our britches as far as production goes. And it's just more stripped down. And I'm really enjoying that. As I age more, that's, you know, I also like to keep my hearing as much as I can. and the electrified instruments don't do that so well. So I'm really enjoying playing with these guys. I mean, I'm extremely lucky as well to get to play with my dad for so long. Mm-hmm. You know, we have become friends from being in bands together. There's nothing like making music with family. And, you know, I feel that way about Nathan, too. He is, you know, I've sang and played music more with Dad and Nathan Lynn than anybody. Nathan, Dad, and I can read each other's minds when we're playing, you know. And you don't just get that with, you know, even walking into a room with the best musician in the world, you're not going to have that intuition with one another. And so it's really cool to experience.
The Wheelhouse Rousters have released two albums, and the third is coming out a few days after this podcast hits the airwaves. Be on the lookout for it. The band started out with the three of them, but Josh said they have added a fourth member, Jake Siner, to play with them moving forward. Josh and I also discussed his personal approach to songwriting.
I will sit down late at night with some, like, right now, anyway, it's like usually Ava's child guitar, and I'll play some little ditty and record it on my phone and expand upon that. I always write the musical part of the song, you know, or the little idea, just because that's how my brain works, I guess. And then I try to fit lyrics. That's just how I work. I don't think I'm the best lyricist, so that's what I struggle with the most. So maybe that's why it comes later. And music just flows most of the time. You know, I sit down and I write a part of a song, and then I write another part of that song, or put two songs, little ditties together. That's usually how I write a melody, is just noodling around on a piano or kid guitar, some instrument, you know, and then I'll say, okay, well, maybe this needs a different instrumentation or whatever, and I'll build upon it. So I guess it's, if it doesn't come to me like that, where it's just, you know, I'm sitting down and it just comes to me, if it's forced, I don't really like that, because I feel like it's not natural, I guess. What if folks say songwriting's like going fishing, just don't fish downstream from Bob Dylan, you know? So you just throw the line out and see what happens, you know, see if you catch something.
Josh said he has written more songs than he can count, but he does have a favorite called George the Whale.
I like it because the structure of the song is... it's kind of like a jazz tune, but the lyrics are goofy.
When I was just a kid, I had a real good friend. He was such a good friend to me. The other kids would stare as I would talk to the air.
In addition to performing and recording his own music, Josh is involved in teaching and recording other people's music. After building up private lessons to the point of expanding to a full-time load, he started his own business called Time on the String. Teaching has been a part of the plan for a long time, but having his own recording studio, that was a surprise. It all started when he was hired to record a film score.
And we were doing it like in the middle of the night where we knew we wouldn't be disturbed, and I put my amp in this room, which used to be the syrup room. The syrup room, meaning it's where the Coca-Cola syrup was made in here. It's like this, it's tile all around, and so I thought, let's put the amp in there and record it, and it'll be really big, reverby sound, and it sounded awesome.
So he reflected, could I turn this into a recording studio as part of my business?
Because I love making records. I love the recording process. I love writing for film. I love recording with bands. It's just been such a big part of my career.
So we finished out the space. In a place where syrup was once made, sweet tunes are now produced. Okay, was that too corny? All right, I'll stop now. But not before playing some music Josh played for me as we closed the interview. I'll let him set it up.
So Trish, my partner, bought me this harmonium for Christmas. She always surprises me with some weird instrument because I like collecting weird stuff. And it is like a meditative thing where it has bellows, kind of like a pump organ or something like that. And so you fill the bellows up with air and pull out one of these stoppers and hit a key, and it plays this note for a long time. And so I've been using it to, like, meditate to, or also to improvise with. And so I'm just going to do something like that, like I would if I was playing with a harmonium.
Sounds great.
Support for this season of Something from Nothing comes from Paducah's Taylor Group, PLLC, a community-minded accounting firm proud to support the creative process. Offering small business consultation, tax services, retirement planning, and more, Taylor Group works to help clients achieve financial viability. There's more about their services online at taylorgroupplc.com. This has been Something from Nothing, a podcast about the creative process and the individuals involved. For more on Josh, you can find him on the usual social media channels. The Wheelhouse Rousters are on Instagram. And we're going to be releasing a new album in the spring of this year. Be on the lookout for that. Editing assistance in this episode was provided 7 hours in the future by Stacy Reason in Germany. You can see more about all the artists on the Something from Nothing social media sites, Facebook, or at Something from Nothing podcast via Instagram. Another creator next week. Be on the lookout on Apple Podcast, NPR One, and WKMS.org. I'm Justin Lewis. I produce this. I'm also your host. Thank you for listening.